morning and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, April 30th, 2019. Tricker countries urge South Sudan's leaders to speed up the work on the peace deal.
Any decision on forming the transitional government as scheduled or delaying to a later date should be made through consensus of the parties. If the parties come to a consensus that a delay is required, they should develop an achievable plan to resolve outstanding issues and move forward in a defined time frame.
And diplomats react on South Sudan's government multi-billion dollar lobbying contract with a U.S. firm.
To have one party, the incumbent government, actually hiring a lobbyist to try to block that part of the agreement. I was very disappointed to see that. I hope that they reconsider that particular role and move forward with the hybrid court, along with the other transitional justice mechanism.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United States, the United Kingdom, and Norway, known as the Troika, are asking parties to South Sudan conflict and elsewhere in the region to redouble their efforts to move the peace process forward. In a joint statement released today, the three countries urge the parties' leaders to demonstrate their political will by working together, which they say should build trust among themselves and the South Sudanese people. Winnie Chirino reports for VOA from Juba.
Reading from the joint press statement in Juba today, Lars Andersen, the Norwegian ambassador to South Sudan, said the revitalized peace deal has reached a critical juncture, given that the agreed-to-date for forming the transitional government of national unity is just a few days away. Andersen says parties to the conflict and regional leaders must work together to end ongoing violence in some parts of the country.
To demonstrate political will, we urge the parties to work together in a spirit of compromise to build trust amongst the South Sudanese leaders and the South Sudanese people. The agreement has brought a welcome reduction in violence in most parts of the country, but civilians are bearing the brunt of continued fighting and a troubling pattern of sexual violence persists.
Parties to the agreement have repeatedly blamed delays in implementing security arrangements on a lack of funds. South Sudan in Focus reported yesterday the South Sudan government recently signed a two-year contract to pay a U.S. lobbying firm $3.7 million to boost ties with the Trump administration and block the formation of the hybrid court. Andersen says the parties are slow in implementing the deal because they have failed to cooperate and agree on priorities left unresolved in the agreement, such as the number of states and the boundaries. Noting that implementation of the deal is behind schedule and several key benchmarks have been missed, Andersen says the parties must decide together what happens next.
Any decision on forming the transitional government as scheduled or delaying to a later date should be made through consensus of the parties. If the parties come to a consensus that a delay is required, they should develop an achievable plan to resolve outstanding issues and move forward in a defined time frame. An open-ended delay could slow momentum and put the peace process at risk.
The Norwegian ambassador praised IGAD's special envoy to South Sudan for engaging non-signatories of the revitalized deal in the peace process. He says it's crucial for all South Sudanese to support efforts to make the peace process inclusive. Andersen says IGAD will play a key role in overseeing discussions about the formation of the transitional government, including the upcoming summit in Addis Ababa.
We appeal to IGAD to appoint a permanent chair to revitalize Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Committee, which monitors the agreement's implementation. The Troika reiterates its commitment to the people of South Sudan and urges the parties and the region to seize this opportunity for peace.
Irregardless of whether there is a delay in forming the transitional government, Andersen says elections should be held by March 13, 2022, as originally scheduled under the revitalized peace deal. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sirino in Juba.
The U.S. ambassador to South Sudan and some South Sudanese are reacting to the payment of more than $3 million to a U.S. lobbying firm to improve ties with the U.S. and block the establishment of the hybrid court. Thomas Hushek says he is disappointed the government wants to lobby against a mechanism of justice, something he calls very important component of the peace agreement. Oyeke Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
U.S. Ambassador Tom Hasek describes the deal between the South Sudan government and a former top U.S. diplomats working for a lobbying firm as very disturbing, saying its aim is to obstruct justice by blocking formation of the hybrid court.
To have one party, the incumbent government, actually hiring a lobbyist to try to block that part of the agreement, I was very disappointed to see that. I hope that they reconsider that particular role and move forward with the hybrid court, along with the other transitional justice mechanisms that are foreseen in the peace agreement, including the truth-telling and healing mechanisms.
Hasek says the hybrid court is part and partial of Chapter 5 of the peace agreement. Agustino Ting Mayai, a researcher and analyst with the Juba-based Suit Institute, says paying more than $3.7 million to a U.S. lobbying firm is a misplaced priority.
If it were to add resources to seek institutions to lobby on its behalf, it should focus on programs that do not undercut the most important elements of the agreement, one being the dealing with atrocities that were committed, crimes that were committed during the wartime, and having the hybrid court being set up to do that. And cutting that basically sets or shows the government in the bad light.
Mayai says Juba's decision to hire a lobby firm indicates there has been little to no dialogue through the embassies and diplomats of the two countries to improve ties. He says the move also shows Juba's lack of commitment to effectively implement the peace agreement. And he says individuals who have been sanctioned must face the consequences of their actions.
The government signs an agreement. That's a commitment. To ask a foreign administration to block what the government has committed to doesn't really take away the responsibility of having signed that agreement already. In addition to the morality or the morale of doing the right thing by the people to make sure that the hybrid court is formed.
Human rights activist Kenyi Asin Abdallah says the government's move to hire a lobbyist signals its lack of interest in implementing the terms of the peace agreement.
Seeking American support either through UN resolutions so that part of that Chapter 5 will not be part of the agreement. This was a flagrant violation of the agreement, which the people of South Sudan wants the agreement to be implemented so that the victims will get justice.
Juba resident Atem Simon was shocked to hear the government had the resources to pay a lobbyist $3.7 million while claiming it had no resources to fund provisions of the peace agreement, such as the security arrangements. Simon says the contract proves it's not a matter of a shortage of funds but a lack of political will.
I think peace is the only way for strengthening the relations with the U.S. If we go with the political will and implement the agreement, that's what the U.S. wants from the all warring parties to put an end to this senseless war and to think forward to save the interests of the people of South Sudan as a top priority.
The South Sudan government and other parties to the deal have said for months that they lack funds to implement several provisions of the agreement. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The UN panel of experts on South Sudan has released details about how activist Samuel Dong and Agri Idri were kidnapped from Kenya and killed in South Sudan by government security operatives. Human Rights Watch has released a statement calling on the government of South Sudan to promptly start an investigation in what it calls the extrajudicial execution of Dong and Idri in Luri. We now go live to Jehan Henry, Human Rights Watch spokesperson, for details on this development. Jehan, are you there?
Yes, I can hear you. Thank you.
Yes. Could you tell us what are the synopsis of this report of the UN panel of experts on South Sudan regarding Dong and Idri?
So the panel has found evidence that corroborates it corroborates the news that the two were kidnapped, in fact, by national security, South Sudanese national security agents, and were taken to Juba and were held in the Blue House. What is so devastating to learn is that the report says that it has found very probable evidence that they were killed in Lurie. This is really tragic and devastating news to get. We have, and Amnesty and Human Rights Watch and others have been for years asking for the government of South Sudan and also Kenya to look into this case of disappearances of these two men, and we did have evidence that we have published repeatedly that they were seen in the Blue House in early 2017. Now it looks like the evidence that the panel of experts bringing forward really gives us confirmation of their deaths and a strong likelihood, they say, that they would be at Lurie. So it is clearly incumbent on the government of South Sudan now to act and to look into this allegation and evidence that has been brought forward, and to get access to the national security locations where they were held, talk to witnesses who saw them, and access Lurie and find the place of burial.
And, you know, the security officers operate under command. Are there names of high officials within the security operatives who ordered their killings?
Well, the person responsible for the National Security Service is Akul Kur, and that is the person who ought to be answering to this case. And there are other pieces of information in that expert's report that would have been transmitted to the government of South Sudan that they should be acting on and looking into. As I say, I mean, this is not exactly the first time we've been hearing about this case. We've been working on it for a long time, and we've been raising it up with officials in South Sudan's government for a long time. And we have always been told to go and ask Kenya about it and basically gotten the runaround. They are certainly able to look into it by talking to the heads of the National Security Service and all others who would have been concerned with this case.
And with this latest evidence that in this UN panel of experts report, what other options are there for the relatives of these two gentlemen?
Yes, I mean, clearly the relatives and the family have been asking the same questions as all of us for the last couple of years, and they deserve to know what has happened. They deserve justice in this case, and it is for the sake of justice that the government really is now must act. There are certainly steps that the family members can take within different legal mechanisms, but let's see if the South Sudanese leaders can answer to this now and start the investigation and start the procedure that would give them some kind of closure to these families who deserve this closure. So let's see what they will say.
Yes, Jehan Henry, thank you very much for giving us that update.
Yeah.
That's Jehan Henry, Human Rights Watch spokesperson, speaking with me live from New York. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a new malaria vaccine is being deployed in Africa. More on that after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how would you advise someone who is struggling in life?
To just keep going, life is full of ups and downs. So it's the way you're able to maneuver, is the way you're able to, because life will give you what you accept. So if you are defeated and you feel you are defeated, then that's all.
He or she should not give up, because once you struggle, you never know one time you can achieve what you want.
Not to give up so easily, because if you want to succeed in life and you give up on something that you want to do so easily, there is no way you can go forward and succeed in whatever you're doing.
I'll tell him not to watch his present situation now, but to still forge ahead and push towards his goal. He should also have a goal and then work towards it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America, and it's time for our Tuesday Health segment. Today we're talking about combating malaria. Children in Ghana are starting to get a new vaccine designed to stop the mosquito-borne disease. Ghana is the second African country to get the vaccine, which is expected to reduce the cases of the sometimes fatal disease, but experts caution that other malaria prevention measures are still necessary. Stacey Kinnott has the story for VOA from the city of Cape Coast.
It took more than 30 years and almost $1 billion to develop the malaria vaccine launched in Ghana today. The vaccine, known as RTSS, reduces cases of the mosquito spread disease in children by up to 40%. Ghana, Kenya, and Malawi are participating in a pilot vaccination program, which began last week in Malawi. Over the next 4 years, about 1 million babies are expected to be vaccinated with 4 doses of RTSS. Cape Coast is a city in one of 3 regions Ghana is targeting due to high levels of malaria. The vaccine is considered an additional tool in the fight against the disease alongside bed nets and indoor insecticide spraying. The World Health Organization's Richard Mahigo says the vaccine is needed because progress has stalled in recent years.
This is really something we are considering in the public health that I dream coming true. Because so far, when we looked at the intervention that had been used to fight the disease, we believe that this new vaccine is going to add quite a significant boost to the fight against malaria.
The World Health Organization says malaria infected 219 million people in 2017 and killed 435,000. The disease remains one of the world's leading killers, claiming the life of one child every 2 minutes. Most of these deaths are in Africa, and more than 250,000 of them are children. Ghanaian officials launched the vaccination program Tuesday with patients from Ewan Polyclinic in Cape Coast. The clinic serves low-income Ghanaians, many of whom live in cramped conditions and prefer to sleep outside where they are vulnerable to mosquito bites. Since 2016, the clinic had seen over 1,000 cases of malaria each year in children under 5. Nurse Agnes Morg-Duncan is hopeful the vaccine will protect children and help eradicate malaria.
So our communities are the main fisher foods, and a lot of people, we have the densely populated area. So sometimes you see maybe a one room and with so many people in one room. And then sometimes they mostly sleep outside before getting to inside. So automatically or definitely they will be bite by the mosquitoes and then they'll be infected with it.
The vaccine will be rolled out in Kenya in the coming weeks, and doctors will watch closely to see if malaria rates decline. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Cape Coast, Ghana.
Japan has donated $2.5 million to South Sudan's higher education ministry to rehabilitate Upper Nile University, which was destroyed during the war. The United Nations Development Programme will undertake the rehabilitation work. University officials and students are welcoming the donation. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
Upper Nile University was destroyed in late 2013 when fighting spread to Malakal town. The university stayed closed for at least 2 years until officials relocated all of its faculties to the capital Juba in 2015. Seiji Okada, the Japanese ambassador to South Sudan, says the $2.5 million donation will enable UNDP to rehabilitate the university and allow thousands of students to return to Malakal as part of the reconstruction process now that people have hopes that lasting peace is possible after last year's revitalized peace deal was signed.
Our project in Malakal, Upper Nile University, is not simply a rehabilitation of the Upper Nile University. After the completion of rehabilitation, 4,000 students and 1,000 school staff are now coming back to Malakal. That's really stimulate the economy, culture, and society itself of the Malakal. So university, we believe the university is a sort of a center of the society in Malakal.
A team from the Higher Education Ministry, UNDP, and Upper Nile University Administration visited the university campus in Malakal, where officials signed the concept note to rehabilitate the institution. The $2.5 million will go toward renovating lecture halls, student hostels and staff accommodation apartments, and libraries. Kamil Kamaluddin, the UNDP representative in South Sudan, says the work will soon get underway.
We did the initial assessment. We are now at a stage where we are ready to hit the ground. And probably in the next 4 to 5 weeks, you begin to see shifts happening.
Mariel Awou, the Vice Chancellor of Upper Nile University, says the project will only benefit the South Sudanese people if the warring parties commit to implementing the revitalized peace deal.
It will have meaning if we implement the revitalized peace agreement, because God forbids, if the maintenance of the university finishes and we go back to Juba and conflict erupts again, we will be coming back running to Juba, swimming across the Nile.
Awou says damage to the university was extensive.
It's disproportionately destroyed, disproportionate compared to other institutions in Malakal. Well, broken windows, doors, some structures inside, some equipment, utterly destroyed to what happened. But exactly that's what they are supposed to do. They'll be fixing the windows, they will be fixing the floors, they will be fixing the doors, the roofs, the ceilings, and anything inside all those buildings.
Bullet holes and missing doors and windows are visible from the outside. Upper Nile University students are praising Japan for funding the rehabilitation of their university. Bakita Mabior is a third-year student of agriculture at the Upper Nile University campus in Juba.
By the student going back to Malakal, the IDPs will also feel home. They will return from the POC and from the camps to their homes. So this is another way of bringing peace to Malakal.
Emmanuel Lado Kose, a third-year student of human resource development, says many challenges remain at the university's main campus.
The lectures halls is not accommodating the old students in the university, and there is lack of the hostels for the students, and the environment is not conducive for the learning.
The Japanese have also donated $500,000 to fix a cultural center at the University of Juba. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
A group of South Sudanese high school students are talking about their experience with bullying in their schools in Juba. They say the ongoing conflict, the deteriorating economy, and the lack of opportunities drive some of their peers to bully classmates, while limited resources to cope with bullying makes life even harder. The students say a new anti-bullying project they have designed with the help of Meridian International Pan-Africa's Youth Leadership Program may help change that.
My name is Edward Kamisa from South Sudan. So our project is basically based on prevention of physical violence in high schools. So the reason as to why we chose the project is because most of the schools in South Sudan, basically the high schools, are experiencing physical violence. Not only physical violence, but other forms of violence. So we first tackled the physical violence. Then after we have tried to at least reduce the rate of physical violence, now we can go to other forms of violence in high schools.
My name is Emmanuel Abutrus James. Most students in high school, bullying and teasing lead to increase of parental abuse, such as shame, anger, guilty.
Yeah, I'm called Esther P. Anthony Goom. Yeah, actually bullying in high school is experienced in a way like someone who is lighter than you, someone who is more powerful, tend to rule you or kidnap or take your things by force, and you don't have right like try to quarrel or to do something for that person. So, and you at times to feel like to report it to the teacher, because when you report it, the person is going to beat you again or do something bad for you. Yeah, at times when students get bullied, actually they report to the teachers, and the things may be solved by administration, and the other students at times they'll be suspended, but it doesn't reduce the rate. It continues to happen. And some of the students, like, they ran away. Like, after being bullied, they left school. They lost interest in schools. And also, as I said before, it leads to less concentration in studies, because you'll be thinking about that someone who is disturbing you.
My name is Manuel Meru Grang from South Sudan. Most children drop out of school not because their studies are very hard and all that, because of the challenges they face in the school. For example, physical violence is one of the cause of dropout in schools. So that's why we have chosen this project to eliminate or to reduce physical violence in high school.
My name is Diana Jackson. We are ambassadors from South Sudan tackling the issue of physical violence in high schools. Violence has become one of a problem because it causes depression and low self-esteem among students. Sometimes students tend to feel at a very low standard because they know that someone is there always. When they stand up for their voice, someone is always there to violate their right. At times, even sometimes teachers also do physical violence. Sometimes the motive of punishment is almost not all that good. And sometimes which bring in conflict between a teacher and a student sometimes. And physical violence can also cause disorders to mental health problems, like when you're beaten by someone or using a very sharp object, sometimes it creates some disorders and mental health problems. So sometimes trauma make you to concentrate less in class, which leads to poor performance in the class. Sometimes even you may not be in the mood of participating in the class because you're always shy. You always feel like you're just there down the side. That's why we are tackling. We need to create a positive environment for everyone to learn freely.
Those were 16 and 17-year-old students from Juba speaking to Ayendeng Bior about their experience with bullying in high school and their project to end physical violence in schools in the capital, Juba. That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song "The Heroes of Our Nation" by Victoria Ole. Been listening to Victoria Ole with the song "The Heroes of Our Nation." I'm John Tanza in Washington. We appreciate you making us part of your evening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. We celebrate.